This week on the show, the NFL playoffs roll on. The Celtics and Bruins are making strides into the new year. And why exactly are we still listening to Imagine Dragons? All that and more coming up. Calling It starts right now. Welcome to the first Calling It of 2019. My name is Alex Barth, joined by Alex Lebowitz. We're recording this on January 8th. We are powered, as always, by CLNS Media. Happy New Year, Mr. Lebowitz.
Happy New Year. Is it too late?
No. No, I mean, it's the first show we've done. It's probably later than it should be, but it's never too late.
It's like that Seinfeld episode. Do you ever see that one? And Jerry Seinfeld's wish to Happy New Year. It's like, it's February. You got to stop.
Oh, yeah. That February's probably too late. I think January 8th is fine.
I feel like we're 2 days away. Once you get past the 10th or 15th.
2 weeks those, in. 2 weeks in is a bit much.
Yeah, I think it's too much. Just move on, you know?
Yeah, I think at a certain point you have to advance. Anyway, speaking of advancing, we'll get right into it. NFL playoffs, wild card weekend is come and gone. The real playoffs start on Saturday. We'll start with wild card weekend before we move on. Lebowitz, give me of the four games, give me one game that really stood out to you. Give me a take something from that first slate.
Okay. I'll go one that a lot of people probably aren't going with, the Colts Texans. Obviously the Colts went into Houston, beat the Texans 21-7, proved a few things to me. One, that Texans team, kind of skated by on an easy schedule. They were good. Obviously they got a lot of good weapons. They're very talented. But they've never really been a top-tier team. And maybe that starts with Bill O'Brien. He's obviously going to be staying there. I think he's a decent coach. But there's just something that's missing from that team. And that was proved from the fact that they lost to the Colts by two scores at home. Another thing I learned, Andrew Luck, he's the real deal. He's back to his normal self. And I think if you're a Patriots fan, that should concern you a little bit. Maybe not. It depends. If you don't want to go to Kansas City, I think you should be probably happy in that outcome, because out of those three teams, or four teams that could have advanced to play, or three teams really, I think the Colts pose the biggest threat to Kansas City. So biggest takeaways, Texans stink. The Colts are the real deal, and maybe we should be worried about them.
Well, I mean, you have to factor in the injuries with the Texans, and that they didn't have Demaryius Thomas or Will Fuller. They were shell themselves offensively, but yeah, that was just a piss poor performance. I'm looking at the Ravens in Chargers game. Evan Lazar and I for Patriots CLNS, we did a series of videos last week before the games, why the Patriots would or wouldn't want to play each team, and the Ravens video for the three possibilities. And the Ravens video is basically like 6 minutes of us, and by us I mean mostly me, just bashing Lamar Jackson. We got so much hate, 70-something comments from Ravens fans, that Lamar Jackson, you know, anywhere from he can beat the Patriots to he's the next Michael Vick. And I don't think I've ever been proven more right than by what happened on Sunday. Lamar Jackson's not good. He's not good now, and I don't know how you can say there's a ceiling there. I think that's going to go down as one of the all-time wasted first-round picks. The kid can't throw. Now, could he end up as like a Terrell Pryor as a receiver? Maybe, because he certainly is elusive, but doesn't have the mental makeup to be a quarterback. Had a lot of trouble standing in the pocket. Clearly does not have the arm. For all the Michael Vick comparisons, I just want to put this out there because I feel like people forget this. Everybody always wants to compare mobile quarterbacks to Michael Vick, and obviously running was a huge part of who Michael Vick was as a football player. But he also had arguably the greatest raw arm the league has ever seen. You go back to the Monday night throw to DeSean Jackson when he was on the Eagles. He threw that ball 65 yards on a line. There's no quarterback anywhere else in the league, maybe before or now, that could make that throw. Meanwhile, Lamar Jackson is throwing ducks 10 yards over the head of 6'5 wide receivers. So, in summary, I think the Chargers are a good team. Not to take anything away from them. We'll get to that in a little bit. But Lamar Jackson, pretty bad at playing quarterback. I cannot believe Harbaugh did not put Joe Flacco in that game. When you get to the second half, right, they force that turnover. You get the ball to 21-yard line, and he can't get you a first down, Jackson can't. That should be the final straw. Because they were still in that game because of their defense and because the Chargers made some mistakes. You need to put Joe Flacco in that game if you're Harbaugh. Now he's turned the fan base against him. He's unfortunately probably turned the fan base against his kid. I wonder what that game did for Jackson's confidence going forward. And I don't know. If Joe Flacco goes in that game, they might win that. They have a chance, certainly. So just that was the worst football I've seen in some time. It was until I saw the national championship game last night. And we'll talk about that at the end of the show. But just pitiful by the Ravens. And the fact that Patriots fans were afraid of this team, they suck. You all should be ashamed that you thought that team was going to, with that quarterback, was going to come into Gillette and beat the Patriots. Never in a million years was that going to happen. I'm sorry, I'm a little over my 2 minutes.
No, please keep going. I think Lamar Jackson, that was pitiful. One of the worst playoff performances I've ever seen out of a quarterback. Obviously, that Ravens offensive line stunk. They didn't give him a lot of time, but there were so many plays where he just ran into sacks. And for a guy who's as elusive and as fast as he is, boy, he is bad at evading the pass rush.
And not just that, he can't hold on to the ball.
Yeah.
What, he fumbled three times?
Yeah. It was awful. It was amateur hour. And he's a young guy, youngest quarterback to ever start in the playoffs. So I'm not willing to give up on him, and I'm not willing to say there's no ceiling there. Hey, maybe he can get better. I don't know. But it was clear that just from the get-go, it was going to be a rough day. He did pick it up at the end, which I was surprised at.
Yeah, I think the Chargers more put it down than he picked it up, but all right.
Well, they had the ball. Yeah, maybe it was them taking their foot off the pedal a little
bit. I mean, Derwin James just watching a ball sail over his head in center field. And Derwin James is a great player, don't get me wrong. Yeah. But he could have had that ball if he really wanted to. I've seen Derwin James make that play. But, you know, to all the Patriots fans who were upset that the Patriots didn't trade up or use one of those first-round picks on Lamar Jackson – you can say what you want about Sony Michel or Isaiah Wynn. That's fine. That's a good discussion to have. There's zero reason the Patriots should have taken that guy, or any team should have taken that guy in the first round. All right, real quick, we'll combine the two games we didn't talk about because they both sort of had the same story, kickers. We're talking, of course, Eagles, Bears, and Seahawks, Cowboys. We'll start with Seahawks, Cowboys, Saturday night. Sebastian Janikowski, what, 42 years old?
I don't think he's quite that old. I'll Google it real quick.
Look it up real quick. Old ass, 260-pound Sebastian Janikowski pulls a muscle despite looking like he's got no muscles left in his body, all fat. And it just kind of screwed the Seahawks up. I think Michael Dixon's a great punter.
He's 40 years old, by the way.
40 years old. Thank you. Michael Dixon's a great punter. I think he should have been able to kick. They didn't really give him a chance. But that game got weird once the kicker left. And I know people want to criticize the onside kick at the end of the game. Dixon doesn't really have experience with that. I thought that the Seahawks just found themselves in a bad spot. And look out for the Cowboys. Cowboys are kind of a sneaky hot team right now.
Yeah. I mean, they're not going to be on the road for the rest of the postseason. So I don't know how concerned I am with them. I think they snuck past the Seahawks. And obviously, the game wasn't as close as the score indicated. But yeah, that Janikowski injury, boy, that was sad to watch.
You had to see that. 40-year-old kicker, 260 pounds. The guy doesn't even wear leg pads. You can see he's essentially just wearing tights. You had to see that coming.
That was a big blow for all of us, you know, big unathletic guys. You kind of live vicariously through Sebastian Janikowski. The guy's a complete, he's just a bulky man. And he could absolutely hammer these balls. He just 60 yards, doesn't matter. You think he's immortal. You think he's one of those guys who just has that old man strength, even though he was a first-round pick. He had it back then, even. And it turns out he's human. And it was sad to see. I hope he comes back bigger and badder than ever. Big blow.
Does he outlast Adam Vinatieri? I think
it has no. Vinatieri's bionic, I think.
Yeah.
I think that guy's going to be in a walker, and he's still going to be, you know, nailing 50-yard kicks.
And you got to love the beard. And then in the other game, of course, a lot of interesting stuff going on. That stupid fumble rule, no recovery, so it's an incompletion that needs to be changed. But I will say this for Cody Parkey. And we had a poll up on our Twitter, and it was who's public enemy number one in Chicago now in terms of sports. Is it Steve Bartman or Cody Parkey? And 83% of people said Cody Parkey. You don't win or lose a football game in one play. Obviously, that's a kick he should make, but the Bears made all their mistakes in that game that let it get to that point. So I'm not necessarily vilifying Cody Parkey as much as I think some people are.
Yeah, no, they just didn't make enough plays offensively. You score 15 points, it's going to be difficult to win a football game. And you also let a team in the Eagles come back and get opportunity after opportunity late in that game. The defense, even though they're the best in the NFL, arguably, at least on paper, they didn't play all that sound. They played all right, but it wasn't as good as they needed to play to win that game. I'm not saying anything new there. With Parkey, though, you got to commend the guy for facing the music at the end of that game. And I know he is getting a lot of praise for how he's handled it, but he deserves it. And when someone misses a field goal like that or has a play in which that will go on in infamy for the wrong reasons, and then, you know, they answer the call and they go to the media and they show remorse, all that stuff, but they go down with dignity. You have to commend it. You have to respect it. Right. And the guy was never a great kicker. If you talk to Cowboys fans, if you hear about him, if you see it on Twitter, they knew he wasn't reliable going into this game. He just couldn't make that kick. It's too bad. The double doink. It's awful. But he's handled it well. So at least that's one silver lining, I guess.
All right. Your thoughts on Patriots Chargers on Sunday?
I like the Patriots going into this one. They've been solid at home this season. I don't think that's going to change this Sunday. And I also think that they're going to change something up offensively coming off of the bye. You have a fresh roster all the way around. But what I'm looking for is production out of the backfield. Will James White get more involved like he has in past postseasons? Will Sonny Michel get more involved, even though we saw him on the decline a little bit during the second half of the year? But most importantly, will this defense continue to play well, and will they be able to shut down Phillip Rivers to an extent? Obviously, he's a guy who uses his running backs a lot in that offense, and they have some weapons. Overall, I'm confident in the Patriots. I think that the rest will do them well. I think given the fact that they're at Gillette and it's a 1 o'clock start, 10 o'clock West Coast, it bodes well for them. Maybe I'm overly optimistic, but I think the Patriots will do what they usually do in the AFC divisional round.
Yeah, I mean, this is no tomato can game. This is a real team. For me, it's all about how they contain Melvin Ingram. I'm going to be getting Gordon and Ingram mixed up all week. Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa. I think the Chargers are built like a team that can beat the Patriots, especially with those two guys in terms of the pass rush. But if they can neutralize those guys, I'm not a huge fan outside of Derwin James of the Chargers secondary. I don't think there's going to be a big game for Gronk. I think they can take him away. But you get into those secondary receivers, guys like Philip Dorsett, guys like Cordarrelle Patterson, I think they can have a big day. I think James White could have a huge game catching the football. And you also got to root for the snow. I've seen anywhere from it's just going to be cold, nothing coming down to half a foot. And obviously that's going to fluctuate. We'll probably get a good idea on Friday of what it's going to be like. But I think like Pats by 3 or 4 in ideal conditions. But if it snows, I like the Pats by a couple touchdowns. So I think it makes that big of a difference. We all got to be rooting for the snow on Sunday. But I mean, I'll say it again. I would not be shocked if this Chargers team can pull this off. This is a good top to bottom football team. They got a strong pass rush. They've got a number of weapons offensively, especially bringing back Hunter Henry. Those are two of the ways you beat the Patriots. You got to have a strong pass rush to get Tom Brady off his spot early. And you know the Bill Belichick thing, take away what you do best, and he'll take away what you do best, and you have to win with your secondary and tertiary weapons. The Chargers' options beyond Keenan Allen and beyond Melvin Gordon are actually very good. They're about just as good as any secondary or below options the Patriots have faced this year. So I definitely think this is a team that can beat the Patriots, but it's Tom Brady at home in the playoffs. I think they ultimately do pick it out. And then Saturday, Patriots fans have to be rooting for the Colts. I know they're red hot. I know Andrew Luck's been great. I know they actually gave the Patriots a bit of a tough time in Foxborough at the beginning of the year. But if the Patriots go to Kansas City, the season ends when they get on the plane. And this team on the road has just been awful this year. It's been terrible. So you've got to hope for another game at Gillette after the Chargers.
Absolutely. And I think that can't be overstated. Even though the Chiefs, you beat them earlier in the season, it was a close one at home where they've been money this year. So I'm with you all the way on that one. You're rooting for the Colts to win. And you brought up a good point with that Chargers defensive line. Just going back to that real quick, you could argue the two most important players on the Patriots this week are Trent Brown and Marcus Cannon.
Who have not played well recently.
Exactly. But again, that bye week is big, and I think that will serve them well. But can they contain that pass rush? Can they give Brady enough time? And unlike Jackson, you know, Brady will help you out a lot. I think he'll pick his spots. And I agree with you. I think 3 to 4 points is probably the margin. But again, Chargers can absolutely win. They are a talented team. It's a legit competitor. It's not the Titans of last year.
That game was a joke. Please, that team, Marcus Mariota is not good. But anyway, and we'll talk about that game, the outcome next week. Hopefully, we won't be recapping the Patriots season. But like we said, you never know. And then Boston's next title hopes. They're looking a little bit brighter. Celtics starting to turn a corner. Bruins, an impressive Winter Classic win. That coming up on the other side. This is Callin' It, powered by CLNS.
Callin' It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
Welcome back to Callin' It, powered by CLNS. I'm Alex Barth, joined by Alex Lebowitz. We're going to talk some hockey, which we rarely do, but we both got a chance to watch the Winter Classic. Bruins have played a couple of strong games their last couple of outings. They're actually playing again tonight. We're recording this about 6 o'clock, so this will probably come out during the game tonight. So obviously some of the information we see might be a little dated. We hope that you excuse that. But overall, even with the loss tonight, Lebowitz, you got to be impressed with what the Bruins have done turning into 2019. They're finally getting healthy. Patrice Bergeron coming back has made a huge difference. And the goaltending has been great, too. This is, you know, at the beginning of the season and when the Bruins were struggling, we kind of talked about there were too many question marks with the team. Like, you couldn't evaluate them because you didn't know. Between the injuries and Halak being new, you didn't know if Rask was just on a cold streak. Now here's the flip side. This is all of the what-ifs going right for the Bruins. And to me, it's about how long can they keep this up? Because we've seen them do this for stretches anywhere from a week to 2 months. They got a lot of ground to make up for from you know, the slip at the beginning of the season with all the injuries.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be an adjustment period, but the adjustment's going really well. The key word is, you alluded to it, stability and sustainability. Will they be able to keep this going? And will Tuukka Rask continue to be productive in net? The past 3 games, recording this the 8th, he's been unbelievable. He's been very good. He's been exactly what you need. And from those top-tier guys, you'll be getting a ton of production. But again, can they sustain it? Is it going to last? And heading towards February, heading towards the All-Star break, will it carry over? But right now, what you're seeing from guys like David Pastrnak, his emergence, Brad Marchand, obviously Bergeron, as always, and guys like Krug, it's been fun to watch. But you need to keep this going, and is this jump going to be enough to you know, get them into the postseason, get them a good seed into the postseason?
By the way, 4 in a row, 7 of the last 9 for the Bruins as we're recording this. They currently sit in 3rd in the Atlantic, so they have a playoff spot. It gets kind of tight down there. They're at 52 points. 4 behind Toronto, 2 ahead of the Islanders and the Sabres, who are the 2 wild card teams. A lot of it for the Bruins, though. I mean, we just talked about this for the Patriots. 15-5 at home. Is it 9-9-0 or 9-9-1? 9-9-4 on the road. Do you remember, like, a couple years ago? I think it was the last year with Claude. It was the last year, second last year. The team just couldn't win at home, especially against bad teams. They were good on the road, but they just struggled so much at home. And you wondered if it was an identity thing. You wondered if it was Rask facing pressure in Boston. It's so refreshing to see the Bruins winning at home again, because they went through this weird 2-year stretch where they didn't do that.
Yeah, I think a lot of times that's more fluky than anything, because it doesn't make any sense. You're at home. There's no travel. You sleep in your actual bed. Why would that be an issue? I don't know, though. I think it does speak to ability to perform when it matters, though, when you do have production at home. And one thing with this team is they're young and they're starting to come together. And, you know, with the core that they have, even though you do have aging pieces, they are getting better. And I think we're seeing a little bit of a jump from last year.
All right. Meanwhile, the Celtics, they picked up the win last night over the Nets. It's kind of weird. Obviously I'm rooting against the Nets last night, but there's still, like, I have to remind myself that we don't have the Nets draft pick, or the Celtics, sorry, don't have the Nets draft pick this year. Is that just me?
Yeah, I thought it was permanent.
I mean, Billy King, if they really worked on Billy King, it might have happened. Celtics, meanwhile, they are 5th in the East. They got a solid 4.5 game lead on the Heat, game and a half behind the 76ers. Let's actually talk about the 76ers a little bit here, because wouldn't you know it, Jimmy Butler is causing problems in the locker room.
No way.
Shocking. I know, right? Do you buy the 76ers team at all? Like, is a legitimate postseason threat?
I'm sorry. No, my mic's malfunctioning. I don't think so. I think they have a lot of personalities. They have a ton of talent for sure. Even if you take the personalities out of it, though, I don't think they're talented to, you know, uproot a team like the Raptors or even the Celtics when it comes to that point. Hell, even the Bucks, they might have some a tough time with. But I just don't see it. I think you need to be more cohesive, which is going to be especially tough when one of your biggest pieces you acquired, a quarter through the season. So they don't worry me at all. I think the question with the Sixers is more, what are they going to do in the future? What's Jimmy Butler's future on that team? But I think more realistically, it's what is Brett Brown's future on that team? And will we see a coaching change sooner rather than later? What will that mean for the rest of the Eastern Conference?
Look, nobody's safe. I mean, Thibodeau beat the Lakers by 20 and got axed. So,
yeah, he might be the guy, though, although not with Butler there.
Right, exactly. Like, no, but it could be because the NBA is a flat circle and it's more entertaining what's going on off the court. The thing I don't get about the Sixers is, like, okay, I get that Ben Simmons is good. Like, he's 6'10", and he has handles, and he can pass, but they need, like, a true point guard. I don't know when Ben Simmons became a point guard. He's a power forward. He's Al Horford. That's what he is. He's Al Horford without a jump shot. He's a great passer. He's got handles. He can score inside. And maybe that's not a perfect comparison, but can't you let him pass from the block and have somebody else bring the ball up the court? Because I feel like it locks the paint up. It limits what you can do offensively when Ben Simmons is bringing the ball up. So I still don't get that. I know that they don't have Fultz, and he was supposed to be the point guard. The guy that team really needs is Isaiah Thomas. I think he'd be a great fit. Because then you give Simmons the ball. He brings the ball up. You give Simmons the ball on the block. Isaiah can move without the ball. Simmons is passing from down low, kicking it out to Isaiah with the defense collapsing on him. That's the kind of guy the Sixers need. But anyway, back to the Celtics real quick. They've played well, but I mean, here are the teams they've beat. You tell me if you're impressed by any of these. They got the Nets last night.
Mm-hmm.
Mavericks, that Dirk game over 10, sad to see. The Timberwolves, I mean, they got some young talent, but are you really impressed with the win over the Timberwolves?
No, not necessarily, no.
And the Grizzlies, those are the last couple of wins right there. And then in that span, losses to the Spurs, the Rockets, and the Bucks, so better teams. Here's what's coming up for the Celtics. We're going to learn a lot about the Celtics in January. They got the Pacers tomorrow night, probably the hottest team in basketball, right? Then I think it's a week. Let me do the math in my head real quick. Yeah, a week from tomorrow, they got the Raptors. Those are both home games. And then another home game at the end of the month on the 26th, they got the Warriors coming to town. So between those three games, again, those are all home games. Celtics have been good at home this year. We're really going to find out a lot because at the beginning of the year, the Celtics weren't beating good teams. And I think there's this narrative of, oh, you know, they got to figure out the new rotations with Gordon Hayward and they got a little bit of a playoff hangover. Tatum and Brown had never played that deep in a season. And fine. If that's what it was, that's what it was. And they're playing better now. But that's really going to get put to the test. If the Celtics go 0-4 in those three games, how much can you believe in this team in the playoffs? So I'm really looking forward to seeing what the Celtics do this month because if like the Celtics teams of the past, those underdog chip on the shoulder Celtics, they would win all three of those games and force us to have the discussion, could the Celtics actually be an upset, you know, title winner? So, but this year it feels like the Celtics haven't done that. It feels like they've shrunk in the big games. So they've got a bunch of good chances to play some good competition after a weaker schedule in December. I think we're going to learn. I know I'm going to learn a lot from those three games. I'm going to base a lot of what I think on the Celtics on those three games.
You got to think that they're going to turn that corner, you know, soon enough. Because last year they had the same core and they were just a mentally, you know, more tough team. And I don't know what changed. I think it's the hype that surrounded this team at the beginning of the year. But sometimes you have to be humbled. I think through December they were a team that underperformed and had a lot of question marks surrounding it. And this month, this is kind of the turning point for any team in the NBA. You have to either, you know, start playing well, getting your stuff together, or you continue to play like you had been. If you are a team that was struggling, this is where your identity is formed. I think given what we saw last year, it's safe to say that they're closer to being that championship caliber team than the middle of the pack or five seed. That said, they haven't shown it to us. And beating teams like the Grizzlies and the Nets isn't enough.
They should be doing it, and they weren't doing it at the beginning of the season. So it's a step.
So it's an improvement. It's an improvement. More. Yeah.
Right. You beat those teams. Now go beat Toronto.
And it goes back to consistency. And it's odd because when someone goes down, that's when they step up and perform and play well. They need to learn how to play well with the unit that Danny Ainge put together. We have yet to see it. I think we still can. And I think although the Raptors are as good as they are this season and kind of have impressed a lot of people, it's not over for the Celtics. I'm not saying one seed, but they can still return to that top of the heap, top of the pile form that they were last year. This is the time where you find out if they will, though.
And I'll say this, just to coincide with the end of football season, when we really start watching this team, beginning of February, they're on the road against the Knicks, and then host the Thunder at the Cavs, host the Lakers, host the Clippers at the Sixers, host the Pistons, and then they got the Bucks in the Raptors, and that's pretty much their whole February schedule. And then they start March with the Rockets and the Warriors, two games in 3 days. So, yeah, Heat's getting – if it feels like the Celtics have been playing a weak schedule, they have. The Heat's about to get turned up on the Celtics, and we'll see how they handle it. All right, on the other side, we'll talk about everything from the college football championship, from the very frustrating coaching job by Nick Saban, to the halftime show. This is Callin' It, powered by CLNS.
Callin' It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
Child, you would wait. All right, welcome back to Callin' It. Alex Barth along with Alex Lebowitz. College championship was last night. Alabama beat Clemson. There's also a halftime show that was entirely too long featuring, is it Imagine Dragons or the Imagine Dragons?
Who cares?
True. Fair point. Do you want me to do my Nick Saban rant now, or should I save it for the end of the segment and then we can do it? Imagine Dragons.
By the way, there's no the. It's just Imagine Dragons. Let's start with the Imagine Dragons. I don't even know their name. Imagine Dragons.
Okay,
we're on the topic.
Why are they still a thing? Like, I get it. They have one good song, and they've released it several times on different albums. Like, it all sounds the same to me, and it's all well and good, but they're a band literally created for car commercials and sporting event intros. Like, I don't how do you just sit down and listen to Imagine Dragons? I don't get it. I don't understand.
It's really bad. I feel like there's a lot of bands kind of like this that are really popular, and you kind of understand why, because it's catchy.
But they're the most popular.
They are very popular. And I think they stink too. I've always been bothered by them. Like Radioactive and Demons, they're catchy songs. And those are like their first two big radio hits. But ever since then, all their songs just sound really annoying.
They sound
and
exactly
kind of
the
similar.
Same.
They're very similar. It's like Boston. Boston, they have some good songs, but they all sound exactly the same.
And I'll say, like, back, not to sound like an old man on my porch, but you know, back when we were growing up, you know, there were bands like that, but they were just kind of interchangeable, and it was what it was, and they weren't these international, you know, I don't know, like, let me think of an example. Fall Out Boy was a good band. I liked Fall Out Boy, but
like, Sum 41 and Good Charlotte were the same thing.
Right, exactly. None of those bands were performing halftime in the national championship game. None of those bands were considered, like, the greatest act on the planet. Is this how far music's come, that this is the peak? And meanwhile, Dan Reynolds, I get that he's a great guy. I get he's handling fame the right way. I appreciate all of that. Good for him. How much money is that guy worth? Buy pants that fit. Show him like 6 inches of sock. Buy pants that fit you, guy. You have so much money. When's the flood, Dan? When is the flood?
It's really funny because it is like he is perpetually in a shallow pond.
Really?
I think that – and it's also funny because he's in that that commercial, the anti-smoking commercial, but he's the only celebrity in it. And you can tell that he was the only person to say yes to doing that. Like, they asked a lot of people because everyone else is just a random actor. Like, just someone who was paid to act in that commercial specifically,
he's
as someone else.
Like, a good guy celebrity, and I appreciate that.
It's the only redeeming.
Get pants that fit you. It's not that hard. If you're going to be a role model, be a role model for good pants. I'm not saying you have to go buy a $5 pair of old jeans at old $5 pair of jeans at Old Navy, but come on, Dan. Seriously. Well,
I can tell you his rationale. He wants to save the denim. That's his thing. He wants to left denim. He wants to save the denim.
I don't think those are denim pants. I think they were leather pants with a what's it called? Pleat that it went up to his shins. What are we doing here? Meanwhile, I mean, I shouldn't talk because I love Lil Wayne, and he continues to look like a little old Jewish lady the way he dresses.
That's why you love him.
Those air compression casts as boots last night.
He reminds you of your mom.
But that he came out and he was great as all. I mean, I saw our intern Ryan tweeted at me the Lil Wayne wasn't that good. Ryan, you were how old when the Carter 3 came out? Like, the kids today, again, I'm being an old man. Kids today don't understand, like, Lil Wayne circa 2009. It's tough to find somebody who's matched that.
I'd even say before that, potentially.
When the Carter 3 came out, when that album came out, I know all of the words to most of the songs on that album. And there's not many albums I can say that about.
You see, I'm not a huge Lil Wayne fan, to be honest. I think that
would you still admit that that was one of the great albums of our childhood?
It was good. I'm just not a huge fan, so I wouldn't put it on my list. I think that he's prolific. He's obviously talented, but he does that thing where it's just like yada yada yada, and then one word, and then it's like it's always something that's kind of like it's always the same style of figurative language.
But he invented that. All these guys now are just ripping him off.
No, not now. Now it's mumble rap. Now it's
mumble rap. That's not right. That's what Ryan was like. I don't like rap. It's too mumble. I was like, you don't know what rap is.
Well, that's not rap. I'm a '90s.
Listen to him.
I'm a '90s hip hop guy. '90s hip hop guy. So you give me Tribe Called Quest. You give me Nas. I love De La Soul. I'm a big Wu-Tang guy. The Roots have always been my favorite. Still are.
Can't you even go early 2000s? Eminem, Jay-Z, Kanye, like that's
That's really good. That's awesome too. It, you know, Big L. That's more '90s and you know Sean Price. All these guys.
Ludacris
are really Ludacris is good. Again,
not the most technically sound rapper, but he makes very entertaining music.
He's got a great voice and he has very good flow, and so it makes great for great. 50 Cent, I think, stinks. I think 50 Cent sounds like he's taking a nap on the track.
His first album was good because it sounded new, and then once he got the bullet taken out of his tongue, that ruined it.
Just like,
you know that he had a bullet in his tongue when he recorded.
The one from Get Rich or Die Trying.
That whole album.
And it sounded like it, but he never lost.
That was the point.
Yeah, but he never lost the low energy. But he's supposed to be a tough guy. It's like,
once he got all his tattoos removed, so he could be an actor. I mean, you lose your tough guy card right there.
Yeah. So not a big 50 Cent guy. There's good and bad in every generation of music.
My point is, I think everybody we just named is better than Pants Don't Fit Dan Reynolds singing the same song for 9 straight minutes. Well, so, and
I think that's a fault of rock too, because it's like
that's not rock. It's pop. It's pop rock. No, it's pop masquerading as rock. Pop rock is music.
Have you ever seen the I don't know what comedic band, but it's like a comedic band and they have a song called Four Chords.
The Four Chords song, there's some Australian band. But there's a difference between pop rock. Pop rock is like All American Rejects, Blink 182, Sum 41. Like that's pop rock.
Yeah, kinda.
Pop masquerading as rock, which is like, again, Imagine Dragons. Coldplay is pop masquerading as rock.
Come on. No, Coldplay is a lot better than Imagine Dragons.
No, but it's the same idea. They want you to think they're a rock band, but they're not. Here's a rock band. Guitar, bass, drums, vocals, and maybe like a saxophone or a violin keyboard. Or something. Keyboard, maybe. There's no electrical element to it. It's not done on a computer. It's played by human beings. Coldplay, Imagine Dragons, Maroon 5, these groups, they use, you know, not GarageBand, obviously, but they're building their songs on computers and then just strumming along to it. That's not rock music. You play rock and roll music. You don't make rock and roll music. So not to sound like a bitter old man, but that's what it is.
I think they're musically fine. You know what? This is one nice thing I'll say about them. I'm going to start trying to do this because I'm overly negative all the time. The one good thing is a couple of years ago at the Grammys, they did a really good mashup with Kendrick Lamar.
That was really good.
That I really enjoyed. And yeah, that's the only time I've ever been like, oh, those Imagine Dragon guys are pretty good. But ever since then, it's been a steep and sharp descent into me hating them.
Well, part of it is, too, they're in every commercial. They're in every game open. They're in every hype video.
Overexposure. It's kind of like Greta Van Fleet, too.
Well, Greta Van Fleet, I've never even listened to them, but I'm inclined to believe they're awful.
No, they're good. From what I've seen. Musically, they're great. It's just unoriginal. It is Led Zeppelin, again.
Well, you got to be original. That's part of being great is being original.
Yeah, but the singer, every musician in that band is very good at the instrument they play. I'll say that.
Speaking of unoriginal, I'm going to do my Saban rant, then we're going to wrap this up. National championship last night, Alabama gets their doors blown off. First off, Clemson had to play a perfect game. They played a perfect game. I way underestimated Trevor Lawrence. That kid can play. I mean, he's throwing guys open. He's looking off safeties. He was outstanding. At the same time, I felt like I was watching the Super Bowl again because there were so many – the game plan going in for Alabama was not going to work. They put no pressure on Trevor Lawrence. They refused to run play action. They were not giving Tua chances to throw the ball to the outside. Clemson was taking away the middle of the field by being conservative with their rush, with their defensive line. And Nick Saban never adjusted. Now, there was nothing as obvious as, put Malcolm Butler in the game, but – start throwing screens and use play action to get the defensive line off their rhythm. On defense, just blitz. One time, Nick, blitz. They didn't blitz at all in the first half. So many things Alabama could have done, and I've said this for years, and it frustrates me more than any other reason you can lose a football game. If you don't make adjustments, no matter how well you play early on, if you don't make adjustments in the sport of football, you lose. It's a game of adjustments. It's reacting and then re-reacting. And Alabama refused. They changed nothing from their game plan from start to finish. And I'm not necessarily they would have won the game. Because, again, Clemson played perfectly. But they put a little more – when a guy like Trevor Lawrence is throwing guys open like that, seven defensive backs doesn't matter. At a certain point, you got to put pressure on him and not allow him the time to step into those throws and be that accurate. Nick, at a certain point, you can't rely on the Wildcat. Or if you're going to use it that much, throw the damn ball. You have a running back who can throw in Jalen Hurts on your bench. I know Josh Jacobs is good, but put Jalen in the game. Do something different. Do something creatively. It was banging the head against the wall from start to finish. No adjustment. No changes. Nothing. They just let Clemson steamroll them. And because during the Super Bowl, I thought I would never see Belichick get outcoached like that. I never in a million years thought I would see Nick Saban get outcoached like that. And that's exactly what that loss is on Saban. I can't even necessarily say the players played poorly because they weren't put in a position to succeed by the coaching staff. They weren't running plays that had a chance to work. So, I don't know. They'll have another shot at it next year. Tua's going to be back. They'll have most of that backfield back. They'll have Jerry Jeudy back. They'll have a good chunk of that defense back. Probably get Alabama Clemson 5. And then who knows what happens after Tua. But that was not fun for me to watch. It really wasn't. Anyway.
Sounds painful.
It was. Again, I felt like I was – the last point I'll make is a lot of people want to talk about the Alabama dynasty being over. It's very much not. It's not. It was one loss. And two, as long as Saban's there, the dynasty's not over. It's not like the NFL where the talent ages out. But just kind of the way that game went, I've always kind of known I was going to watch that game. I just thought it was going to be the Patriots. That game, to me, put the Patriots in Alabama's shoes, whether it's an AFC championship or a Super Bowl, one of the two, that's how I imagine the Patriots dynasty is going to end, a game like that. And I kind of always knew I was going to have to watch that game at some point. I just thought it was going to be the Patriots. So maybe now I can prepare myself. I don't know. Maybe that's Sunday. I don't know.
Yeah, it could very well be Sunday. It could have even been earlier than that.
Yeah.
I think hindsight is when you really figure that out.
But anyway, I don't know if you have any thoughts on the game. I know you didn't stay up for the whole thing. Yeah, get up.
No thoughts on the game. I do have one final thought that's very off topic.
No, hit me with it. Wait. Okay. And now, final thoughts, Alex Lebowitz.
Okay, thank you. Will Ferrell. I haven't seen his new movie with John C. Reilly, but I really don't want to. I think I'm declaring his career dead.
No.
What's the last good movie he made?
He hasn't been making that many movies.
He has been making movies.
The Sherlock Holmes one looks kind of funny. I might actually see that. I don't really see movies.
It's been unanimously considered a brutal movie, and I saw the trailer.
Here's the thing: like, so was what was that Epic movie? Do you remember that one?
Okay, then maybe we just have different tastes.
I've been told I have horrible taste in movies, but
Epic movie is what it is though. Like, that's as expected. Will Ferrell, there's a standard that needs to be upheld, and he failed to do that. And the thing that's most disappointing is you're bringing back the duo. You're bringing back John C. Reilly and Will Ferrell. That duo,
it works.
Step Brothers and Talladega Nights. No, but that's the thing. You got to come back with a bang, not a movie that's the setting is the 1800s, and you put on these funny accents. That's not you're not going to be able to be funny the entire time. It gets old because then you're relying on a gimmick. I think this is an Adam Sandler type decline in his career, and the days of Will Ferrell making those movies. You know, that 5-year stretch where he just could not stop being the funniest man in the world. That's done. It's over. I think he's past his prime, and we gotta welcome in the new comedic regime, for lack of a better term.
Will Ferrell's maybe my favorite actor of all time.
He's great.
Much like with Eminem, when everybody said his career was over, I refused to admit it, and then he came back with Kamikaze, and it was great.
But here's
you hit on so many times in a row. It just gets hard to live up to that standard, right? It's like Tom Brady. Right, it's like Tom Brady. Tom Brady had a good year this year. Relative to the average NFL quarterback, Tom Brady had a good year. But, you know, it wasn't Talladega Nights. It certainly wasn't Step Brothers. So everybody's going to say he was bad. But he was bad relative to himself, but he was still pretty good.
Well, here's the issue.
There's still the chance for him to rebound. So let's not bury Will Ferrell after a couple of off years, okay? He can still bounce back. And remember, he's played the dad aged character. In 5 or 6 years, he's going to be old enough to play the grandfather, and that's going to open up a whole other role.
That's a supporting role, though. And
if anybody's going to make that the main role, it's going to be Will Ferrell, and that opens up a whole bunch of opportunities for him. Once he can play grandfather, I mean, he gets to start back from square one.
I think I'm not discounting that. I think that could absolutely happen. I think I'm not saying he'll never make a funny movie again. I just think the prime is definitely over. And here's another thing you're missing.
Are you cliffing Will Ferrell right now? Are you Max Letterman calling Cliff on Will Ferrell? I take that as a personal attack.
Well, no. Let me finish this point because you make the Tom Brady comparison.
Okay.
Who is Will Ferrell's Bill Belichick? Do you know
Adam McKay?
Adam McKay. What movie did he just make?
I don't know.
He made Vice, the one with about Dick Cheney with Christian Bale. Prior to that, he made The Big Short. He's leaving the comedic realm. So the one guy who made all of those classics with Will Ferrell has now moved on to a completely separate genre and is over comedies in general. So
is he taking a break?
He's not. I think he's run out of ideas, and he'd rather do these stories. He'd rather do dramas based off of real events. I think it's a lot easier to come up with those storylines than to come up with, you know, a movie about 2 40-year-old men who still live with their parents. So become stepbrothers. I think that he's done. I think that duo, it's not entirely done. Maybe they come up with a funny idea and a really good movie down the line. But I'm not overly optimistic. Just got to be honest. I'm not overly optimistic, and that's one of the main reasons why.
I'm not counting Will Ferrell out yet. I think you're sleeping on an all-time legend. But we are way over, so that will do it for us.
And I'm not denying that he's an all-time legend. He is an all-time legend.
That'll do it for us this week. We'll be back next week. Definitely some Patriots talk. Happy or sad to be determined. Celtics and Bruins as well. Also, we're like still waiting on Manny Machado and Bryce Harper, which is weird.
And Craig Kimbrell.
And Craig, well, Craig Kimbrell's never going to get what he, like, that one was going to take a while. But
yeah, he'll be signed in March.
We'll talk about that all next week. Follow the show on Twitter, at Calling It Podcast. You can check us out online at clnsmedia.com. For Alex Lovitz, I'm Alex Barth. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.